All right, welcome into the Fan pregame. We're here with a new Stanley Cup champion. Canada's got to wait. Hopefully not 30 more years, but they got to wait. So congratulations to the Florida Panthers. 30 years in the making. We're going to chat with Bill Lindsay, former Panther color analyst, who called last night's historic win. His call was actually unreal.
It was emotional. It was loud. It was exuberant.
Take a look on many things. Twitter or X, and you will see how much he's got left in the tank.
Yeah, we'll ask him about it for sure. While the Oilers were losing in seven, the Blue Jays ran their losing streak to seven. Chris LaRue will join us in studio in about a half hour to unpack the last week and spin it forward with the return of Bo Bichette batting leadoff today. And of course, we'll get to best bets, probably touch on the Blue Jays game then as well.
It was probably good news that a lot of people were watching the Stanley Cup final last night, and to keep yourselves from watching the Blue Jays, which we'll have to talk about. But it was the most watched broadcast ever on Sportsnet. That is unbelievable. 7.55 million average viewers, which reached a total population of 39% of Canada at 15.9 million. And then another 1.9 million on Sportsnet Plus. Most watched game ever on Sportsnet Plus. So, I mean, go us.
Yeah, the Panthers have the plastic sheets around in their dressing room. We should have plastic sheets everywhere popping champagne today.
We're the pregame to the most watched broadcast ever on Sportsnet.
I guess we could take some credit. But no, that's awesome that, you know,
delivered. The whole series delivered.
But the whole, like, captivated Canada thing got to be pretty tired. But this is proof that clearly
Canada was captivated.
Canada was more interested in this Stanley Cup final than previous Stanley Cup finals because it involved the Canadian team, because it involved Connor McDavid.
You can thank your dad.
Because, well, very small, very, very small part of that.
Yeah. Okay, so
he got my mom watching. That's about it.
There you go. Then, you know,
it's one Canadian.
There was 39% of Canadians watching. So that was awesome. So, of course, last night, 2-1 victory for the Florida Panthers. The storybook that I was writing and excited to read, ending in an Oilers victory, did not fully get there. The comeback was not complete with any one of the Oilers lifting that Stanley Cup, but we did see a great game. We saw a lot of emotional moments. I mean, watching the Stanley Cup come out, just, it gives me chills. Those moments where the clock is counting down and you know it's going to happen. It's been the first time in a while that a home team also won a Stanley Cup on home ice, which just adds to the excitement of it. Like, there was just so much, even though last night's attendance was like 50-50, nonetheless, it was just a really awesome reminder of how wonderful a game this is and how great a trophy the Stanley Cup is. So, I mean, I'm feeling a little sad for the Canadian part of me, but I love watching a team win and achieve their goals.
Yeah, it's the best. I was exhausted after because there's so much thinking about this. I can't imagine what it's like for the players because just when did we start this? Like over 2 months ago, April 20th,
Seriously,
when the first game was. Like, we've been at it. They've been at it for so long. And yeah, it's the culmination of like how much energy put into that very that's very singular moment. And of course, it's the Florida Panthers that get to enjoy it. What are you going to remember from last night? I mean, Paul Maurice had an interesting little speech there. We had a loser of the Stanley Cup final win the Conn Smythe Trophy.
Let's start there.
And not come out. Is that the thing that is most interesting from last
night? I don't think that's the thing I'm going to remember most about it, but I think it's the most interesting discussion. And we'll have our text line open at 590-590. So McDavid wins the Conn Smythe, which was a heavy favorite nearing game three or four, when the tide started to turn.
Yeah.
McDavid became the heavy favorite for the Conn Smythe, and he ends up winning it. And it doesn't happen often, doesn't happen really ever. And he doesn't skate out to receive the trophy after he stayed on the ice and shook everyone's hand and waited for his entire team to come off and lingered. He didn't come out to take a photo with the Conn Smythe, and I'm fine with it, honestly. I think in that moment, you're already in the locker room with your teammates. You're the leader. You're the voice of that locker room. I think it doesn't matter to me if I see a photo of Connor McDavid with the trophy or not. It doesn't matter to me. I think a bigger discussion is should Connor McDavid won the Conn Smythe?
Yeah, and I'll answer that question first. I think not, honestly. And I think this should probably spark some sort of reform in terms of how they're deciding this award because there was no right answer when the ballots were going in, right?
So explain to listeners that might not know the process of Conn Smythe voting.
Sure. I mean, I think there's a panel of 18, I believe it was, and I think that can change or fluctuate whatever they are chosen based on who's been covering, you know, the entirety of the playoffs. But they're asked to submit their votes at about the 10-minute mark of the third period. So yeah, if you're in a game seven scenario where maybe it's tied, in this case, it wasn't, the Oilers were trying to tie the game, but you could have someone score the overtime winner and that not be part of that decision-making process. I believe you can put a caveat on it. You could be like, oh, if Alexander Barkov scores the overtime winner, then my vote's for him. You can do that. But it was impossible to do that in that moment because the story hadn't been completely written. If you wanted to vote Sergei Bobrovsky, immediately he lets in a couple goals. Well, that's who you, not who you'd want on your ballot number one if the Edmonton Oilers won the Stanley Cup in that scenario. So I feel like there should be a better way to do it because, yeah, McDavid had a legendary performance in the Stanley Cup playoffs, near record-breaking in terms of points, record-breaking in terms of assists, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for it. But to go pointless in 6-7, to not win the Stanley Cup at all, I just feel like the case kind of lost some steam there, and there was nothing they can do to kind of turn it around and go a different route. Yeah, there's no obvious Florida Panther, like, smacking you in the face. Like, it has to be that person. But I think if they could make the decision after the game, we probably, not probably, I think there's a really good chance we would have a different person actually win the award, and you could further celebrate a Stanley Cup champion with someone winning the Conn Smythe too.
Okay, so McDavid gathered 16 of the possible 17 first place votes, and that's the Professional Hockey Writers Association members, so it's a selection of them. 17 people, 16 of them voted Connor McDavid first, one individual voted Ryan Clark from ESPN. These are all public too. Frank Saravelli tweets them out, so you can see that. He voted Bobrovsky first, but everybody else voted McDavid first. The second place finisher was Barkov with 46 points to McDavid's 83 points. So it wasn't even close. And
but Barkov was number two on, like, I would say 90% of
the ballots. Number two on every single vote except for two. Yeah. The only other option was Jim Matheson voted Hyman second, and Ryan Clark, who voted Bobrovsky first, put McDavid second and put Barkov third. So everyone else had a very similar one and two, and that's why it's an overwhelming win for Connor McDavid. And Connor McDavid obviously set a lengthy amount of records and historical performance in this Stanley Cup. But it's difficult to feel like this was a slam dunk right away when you're held off the score sheet in game six and seven. And last night, obviously, I think McDavid's impact was, I was waiting to see his impact. I thought, this is
That's the story of game seven, and is that Connor McDavid, the Conn Smythe Trophy winner, couldn't actually get going in the game.
And I hoped that we would see the Connor McDavid story come full, like, full value in game seven, and we were left wanting that. But he did, as we mentioned, got 42 points in 25 games. This is the Stanley Cup playoff MVP, not the Stanley Cup finals MVP, which is different from other leagues. So if you look at the entire playoffs, it makes sense. He statistically had one of the most incredible postseasons of all time. It just sucks that in game six and seven, some of the most important games, and clearly the one that decided the cup, Connor McDavid was not the most impactful player. I think Barkov has a strong, strong case, and clearly in all the votes, he's that guy that comes second. He shut down the guy that ultimately wins the Conn Smythe and isn't able to produce in the final two games. Barkov is going to continue to be underrated, and I don't know how much more we can give this guy. Like, I want him to be fully rated, right? Yeah. But it's hard because he doesn't play that flashy goal-scoring style, but he does everything that needs to be done to not allow for the best players. And every single time that the Florida Panthers matched up with someone, Barkov was like, nope, you're not going to produce. Nope, you're not going to allow this to happen. And that's what happened with McDavid.
Really, aside from those two games. And if you're, I mean, you can dock Sergei Bobrovsky off two games. I guess you can do the same with Alexander Barkov, but you could do the same with Connor McDavid, who again did not get it done in game seven after being held without a point and a shot in game six. And I think it really does perfectly sort of encapsulate Barkov's story, where he is driving success.
Underrated enough that he doesn't win that.
Yeah. And it's unnoticed, right? It doesn't go, it is not recognized. I know he won the Selke Trophy this year, but it goes without recognition. Ultimately, what's more important? If you ask Connor McDavid, I think we know what's more important. And that was, it's a bit confirmation bias on my end because I was kind of not in the camp of wanting to give it to McDavid in a loss because I knew you weren't going to get that photo op. It's responsibility of the team, not to Gary Bettman. He should be with his teammates during that moment, not on the ice with 35 members of the Florida Panthers. So it's for that reason, I'm okay with him not coming out. But he doesn't want it this way. it is disrespectful, I think, to the Florida Panthers, who had candidates who could be selected for this. And yeah, it takes away a little bit from the celebration, where you should have that moment where someone does get their flowers. That could have been the moment for Barkov, but Barkov's like the defining sort of characteristic of his career continues through this moment where, yeah, he doesn't get recognized when there was the opportunity to do so.
Okay, so the McDavid discussion with the Conn Smythe, and maybe there's a way to make the voting better. Maybe they award it at the NHL Awards, which is in like 2 days. Maybe there's a better way to do it. Our text line.
Technology is pretty good nowadays. I feel
you could just text it.
Final whistle, they could probably figure that out in the space of 5 minutes.
590-590, our text line is open. But before we get to Bill Lindsay, what else are you going to remember? We can go really, there's so much. There's a whole season to unpack, really, in one night.
I think, you know, big picture, I think, you know, we talk about Gary Bettman's successes all the time, right? And his failures, too. Like, we talk about how Arizona, the way that it happened. But all the good things, like, for every Arizona, there's a Las Vegas, and there's a Tampa Bay, and so on and so forth. I mean, Florida coming of age as a franchise and becoming one of those success stories. Like, I do feel like, in the last 10, 15 years, probably the most irrelevant team in the NHL. Kind of a read through in all facets, not a team that could ever really gain any traction, but they've had changes, important changes with ownership and with their management team. And, you know, you see videos of their facilities now and the golf carts and everything. They look like they're one of the premier destinations in the NHL all of a sudden. And I don't know how it happened underneath all of our noses, but Florida kind of legitimized themselves before winning the Stanley Cup, but it took this Stanley Cup for everyone to kind of see that play out in front of everybody.
And it took a long time, 30 years in the making, and Bill Lindsay, who's going to join us now, was on the call last night for what is a multitude of reasons, a very special one for him. Bill, appreciate you joining us. How are you doing? How are you feeling? How's it going?
Yeah, I'm doing it. Hey, Justin, doing all right. Running on a bit of fumes. It's getting a little bit tiring.
I was hoping you'd join us from the elbow room.
Yeah. I don't have that in me anymore. I'm too old. Back in my younger days, yes, I'm there. Probably away for a couple days back. If I'm those players, I'm sure they're going to enjoy it. Don't have that in my arsenal anymore, unfortunately.
Well, the Oilers dragged the Panthers back to Alberta. Maybe the Panthers will drag you back to the elbow room at some point over the course of this Stanley Cup celebration summer. We heard your call earlier. What was it like for you watching the final seconds tick off the clock, watching the Florida Panthers scrum it in the corner and win themselves a Stanley Cup? What was that moment like for you?
Unbelievable. It's cringeworthy when I actually hear the call because I don't, whatever's coming out of my mouth, it's misspoken. It's Stanley Cup. It was just misjumbled. The nervousness that I felt before that game was nothing I've ever experienced since I was playing, since game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final back in 96 against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And the nerves were heightened for numerous reasons. But the biggest reason was that after that game, I was either going to feel the greatest elation of my life and finally see this come full circle for this franchise, or a gut punch and go down in history. That's something that as a franchise, you may never recover from. You're going back to World War II, 1942, when there were 6 teams. So in theory, if they would have lost, it would have been the greatest collapse that we had seen in NHL history. So going into that game on the call, I wanted the Panthers to win so badly for so many reasons to get here. But part of it was that storyline that had been written by the Edmonton Oilers with this comeback. And that call at the end was pure enjoyment, excitement, but relief that we were able to capture that and to get that feeling. And it exploded out of me. I was just unable to really control myself. Felt a little bad for my broadcast partner, but it was a dream come true. Let's put it that way.
Who do you think of first, your journey? You know, you were a former Florida Panther from the original times. You've seen this organization get to this point. Like, who are you most happy for that this finally got achieved?
For our fan base, a lot of it. That's a big part. They stuck through us through the good times and the bad times. And we had the rally towels at the rink that said all 6 of us. We were...
And the rats.
Or whatever you want to call it. We were always congratulations to you and all 6 of your fans. glad to hear that from around the league. So very, very happy for our fan base. Kyle Opozo is first class all the way to see him get a Stanley Cup. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, players that have been in the league a long, long time. Alexander Barkov, the first Finnish captain. Quiet leadership, humility. There's never been a more humble guy than Alexander Barkov. To play the way that he does is extraordinary. I could not be happier for him. At the end, the most that touched me the most, the person with the cup on the hands and what I explained before with all or nothing, Paul Maurice, mm-hmm. 26 years behind an NHL bench. If you're Paul Maurice going into that game, I'm a bundle of nerves. How do you come back and coach the next year if you lose when you were that close? How devastating, demoralizing. Hopefully those thoughts, they had to run through his mind at some point, but that's all forgotten now. And if he wasn't already in the Hall of Fame, he punched his ticket last night. Paul Maurice is going in the Hall of Fame as one of the greatest coaches of all time. So to see him just kind of after all these years and evolve as a coach and tap into this team and get the most out of these players, and when they needed it the most, and it was demanded that everyone in that team play their best game of the season, game number 7, you could go 1 through 18. Everyone that stepped on that ice contributed in a big way. And so happy for the whole organization, fan base, and those players I mentioned, and Bill Zito, our GM, but Paul Maurice at the end, that was the cherry on top.
So this organization, Bill, has clearly come of age. I think it came of age before it won the Stanley Cup last night, but something did change. If you're assessing that change and looking at to how this franchise got to this point, like, who spearheaded this? If the wheels were spinning, who stopped them from spinning and made this organization Stanley Cup viable all of a sudden?
Mr. Viola, the ownership. No discredit to our other owners. But you had to go back to 1993-94 when we started with Mr. Huizenga. It was complete from top to bottom in our organization with Huizenga, the office staff. It was a family. He wanted it to be a family. He wanted to make sure that everyone had a role to play, that everyone contributed. And it went from the office staff, the training staff, to everyone working, the surroundings, to the coaches, GMs, the players. Well, Mr. Viola comes in, and I loved all our owners that have been here. But Mr. Viola said, I'm going to give you the resources. I'm going to give you the money. I'm going to put you in a position. You guys are going to do it, and I'm going to step away. It's up to you now. You guys will be able to spend the salary cap. So it starts there with the ownership. He puts people in the organization to have a chance to succeed wherever it's at and make the most of your opportunity. And it's up to you to put into the work. If you work hard for this organization, you're going to be part of it. And you'll stick with it. And that's what's happened. We found a lot of people that work hard, are committed to the Florida Panthers. So that is the change. You bring in Bill Zito, the moves that he made as a GM, Forsling off waivers, Verhaeghe, picking up from Tampa Bay, making him a top six for the trade for Bennett, the trade for Tkachuk. It kind of goes down the list. And then bringing in Paul Maurice, So the fan base after 23 years was promised. But now you make the playoffs 4 straight years. You win a President's Trophy. You make the big trade for Tkachuk. You get to a Stanley Cup final. Then you get back there. So it's been a whole organizational thing from the top all the way to the bottom. To whoever, you could go in the office and find the lowest person on the totem pole. And they're working hard at their job and they're happy. And they're in a position that maybe if they work, they can build and succeed through it. So Mr. Viola, it has to start at the top, and that is where it started.
So if that's the Viola effect, does Alexander Barkov have the same sort of effect when it comes to his responsibilities, which is the room? Did he provide that same sort of transformative influence where everyone's following his lead and he's putting or helping put everyone in place to do their jobs and do their jobs at a high level?
Yes, Justin, it's absolutely correct, because to get into a Stanley Cup final, what you have to have is when you're sitting in a dressing room, and I went through this with Brian Skrulin and Scott Mellenby, two of the best captains that I ever played with, and one was quiet and Scott Mellenby, one was loud. But Alexander Barkov is humble, but the way that he plays the game, he never cheats the game. Defensive side of the puck, prototypical. If I was to build a hockey player, I would build him like Alexander Barkov. So when you have that captain that is not so strong on words, but every time he takes the ice in practice, it's 100%. When he goes out there and he plays the hockey game the right way, now everyone has to follow. And what happens in a dressing room is it filters down into the next person. You sit beside the guy beside you, and when there becomes a fear of failure, not for yourself, but all of a sudden, that person is working so hard beside me. If I play a bad game, I'm not going at home feeling bad about myself. I just let that guy down. I'm in shambles. How did I let my teammate that is, and it just goes in, it starts with your leadership from Barkov and goes down and down and down throughout the room. And if you're a fourth line guy on this Panther team, you better play with your hair on fire or you're not, it's just, so that's how you kind of get this whole work ethic ingrained. And what the product that you see on the ice is this brotherhood that's developed and trust that's developed behind the scenes. There is a bonding, and it becomes like a pack of wolves, all for one, one for all. And it epitomizes the Panthers, and it starts with Barkov.
Yeah, I think we saw that brotherhood come alive on the ice, in the dressing room, at the elbow room, in the beach today, in the ocean. So
in the ocean.
Yeah, so I don't know how much you got to be involved, if you got to go down on the ice, go see the guys in the locker room, but take us quickly through what last night's celebration was like, because what we see through social media looked like it might smell like champagne in Florida today.
Yeah, it does. I went down on the ice and got to experience it, take it all in and soak it in, and just really shake the players' hands and say thank you for all your years to live this dream vicariously through them. When you retire as a player, you only have one shot maybe to put your hands on that trophy, mm-hmm. and it's to be with an organization. And it's with an organization that I love to go down and shake those guys' hands and just say thank you from the bottom of my heart is kind of what puts it into perspective, this whole run. And I've had my dad here taking care of him in hospice care and my wife for 27 years. And all those people to have him and by me and to know what it took to tie my skates at a young age and get you through all this, what happens with all these players. But to enjoy that with my wife and my dad after all that on ice celebration, that is gut-wrenching. And I can't put that into words. To hug your father and your wife that's been so committed, and you've taken them and drinks in a Pincher Creek, wherever it is in small town Canada, your wife that stuck through you, drag her to hotel rooms all across North America, Germany, wherever it is, and she's by your side. Once you share that, like the players, they'll have the same stories, but once you share that with your family, that is everything and more that I could ever dream of.
Well, that's touching, special, like just to hear you talk about it. We'll let it all sink in. You guys deserve a lot of credit and congratulations being a part of this journey. First Florida Panther Cup, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. Celebrations seem to be on Sunday. I believe that's when the parade is. So.
Yeah.
Get there and enjoy Sunday, yeah. It. It'll be a blast.
All right, Ashley, Justin, I appreciate it very much.
Thanks so much for joining us, Bill. Appreciate it. Bill Lindsay, Florida Panthers color analyst, former Panther NHL Network.
Well, we should all be so lucky to win a Stanley Cup. The amount of perspective it evidently provides. Yeah. That was nice from Bill.
Feel bad we had to let him go quickly because our break's in 60 seconds. But the moments you see the players. One thing that we didn't touch on in the first block before our break was the Tkachuk family.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing Brady and his dad and his mom and his partner and his sister, the camera did an amazing job at following their reactions and then seeing that moment when they got to get to Matthew on the ice. Like that to me, whether you think he's a rat or an instigator, whatever, it was awesome to see. And that filled me with like a lot of love.
Yeah, I love what Matthew said, in his interview with Sportsnet that, you know, Brady's too good not to win. Mm-hmm. So now the pressure goes to Brady Tkachuk. But Tkachuk family is the Stanley Cup champions now.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Chris LaRue is going to join us in studio to talk about that Jays game that not a lot of us were watching, but Chris was. Talk about that next.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into the Fan pregame. Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, the Fan. All eyes shift towards the Toronto Blue Jays now. No more hockey. Oh, actually, this week's pretty busy. We'll get into it after our final guest of the day. This gets right back into the swing of things. The draft's in a couple days. You got free agency, et cetera, around the corner. But we can put some time in to talk to Chris LaRue, who joins us in studio, Blue Jays color analyst. Chris, how are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
My personal life is great.
That's yeah. So good to hear.
That's the most important thing, right?
We were joking about how most people had their eyes on Game 7 last night. You know, it was the most watched Sportsnet event ever or show ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So also the Blue Jays were playing and they did blow it. So maybe, like, was it one of the most deflating losses of the season? Like, what happened last night?
There's been a lot of deflating moments, I think. I think that one was probably the biggest.
Oof.
You can, I mean, we were just chatting about how you knew the game was 6-2
and it was
6-6. Things were great. And then all of a sudden you blink and it's 7-6, right? So I think maybe when you think of it that way, yeah, it was pretty deflating. But there's been a few moments this season that have been pretty deflating.
We've been fully immersed with the Stanley Cup final last actually 4 weeks. It's been a long stretch, mm-hmm. but I guess more so in the last week, because I guess it coincides with a pretty bad losing streak here for the Toronto Blue Jays. So what's driving that? Like, what is the key issue right now for the Blue Jays? Because this thing seems to fluctuate in terms of the issue, which is not a great thing and maybe a reflection of the strength of the team overall, but what's hurting them lately?
Well, from my perspective, I feel like a lot of it falls on the bullpen right now. Mm. Like, there's no – when I talk about the bridge people in the bullpen, it's the guys that can come into a ballgame in, like, the 6th, 7th, and even the 8th inning. You can bridge it to the super high-leverage guys, right? And the Blue Jays just don't have that. They have Nate Pearson, Tim Mazza, Zach Pop, Jimmy Garcia is gone, Jordan Romano is gone. Mm. There's just nobody to really bridge that gap. And those guys are kind of overlooked, but they're super important in a bullpen. You look at the teams that are really good, and they have those two or three bridge guys that can get you to the end of a ball game. And we saw last night that when you bring in Nate Pearson in a high leverage situation, when you bring in Zach Pop in a high leverage situation, sometimes it's great. And then sometimes it ends up like last night. And I mean, the offense obviously hasn't been great for the most part this season, but it's sort of coming along with the addition of Spencer Horowitz. I really like him. I know that you guys have been immersed in this hockey thing, so you haven't really been.
He played for the Bisons. Yeah, you know that. He's up
yeah,
there now.
That's all you know, but that's all you know. The only thing you've been thinking over the last 3 weeks is Connor McDavid.
It's true. Oh, poor guy.
But so Spencer Horowitz, I think, is a great addition to this team. Bo Bichette is back tonight. Obviously, mm-hmm. Vlad, we all saw that home run
that
last night. Yeah, that's impressive.
Like, have you seen that before? That went to, like, New Hampshire.
If my geography is right, yeah, I think you're right there.
I went to school in New Hampshire, so I know where New Hampshire is on the map. But he, like, that was a crazy home run.
I mean, he's been great. I know that a lot of people have been on him about his power outage, I guess. But, like, he is – I've said this to you a couple of times, but, like, he's one of the most impressive hitters of the generation.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I know people have differing opinions, but I think that – regardless of the 10 home runs and the low RBI rate, I think that he is top five in the game in terms of offensive side of the game. And you might disagree, but I'm holding steady with that opinion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's one of the safer opinions right now, at least if you're trying to be positive about mm-hmm. this team. Maybe it's not him that's most aggrieved, but maybe it doesn't have to be about who's most aggrieved, but I'm thinking about being, you know, life as a starting pitcher right now for the Toronto Blue Jays, how difficult it would be, because first it was the offense letting you down and they've acknowledged they've had to be perfect. And now the bullpen letting them down to the point where they got the worst pitching this month, according to FanGraphs. Like, how brutal is it to be a starting pitcher right now for the Blue Jays?
Oh boy. It's stressful going out there knowing that you have to be basically perfect, right? You have to give up two or three runs or fewer to win a ball game. That's almost impossible.
And go deep?
and go deep. I guess now, especially with Jimmy and Jordan not healthy, I think that's just another added layer to this stress that the starting rotation is feeling. And this isn't a Toronto Blue Jays thing, but you saw it last night with Tanner Houck. He comes out of the ball game mm-hmm. and he's up 6-2, and the Boston Red Sox decide to bring in Isaiah Campbell, mm-hmm. who has a 12 ERA. And what did Isaiah Campbell do? He gives up four runs mm-hmm. to, you know, three run shot to Vlad, and then I don't know how he gave up the other run, but mm-hmm. it's kind of the same situation with the Blue Jays. You pitch really well, and then they take you out, and here comes Nate Pearson, who's not a bad pitcher. I think Nate Pearson can be great at times. And here comes Tim Mayza, mm-hmm. who's not a bad pitcher. I think he can be great at times. Mm-hmm. And then Zach Pop. And Zach Pop's kind of the same. He's up and down. So it's just one of those things that you just kind of have to weather the storm until Jimmy comes back, until Jordan comes back. And if they don't come back, then the trade deadline is coming. Right? And I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, mm-hmm. but not really. It's the Blue Jays front office has a lot of decisions to make coming up in the next couple of weeks, especially with the Yankees coming, the Astros, mm-hmm. the Seattle Mariners. It's a tough stretch. So what would you do if you were Ross Atkins?
I would want to know if I'm making the decisions, I guess, yeah. first. No, I'm team fire sale. If the number one yeah. priority is to win a World Series, I mean, with the remnants of this group, I'm not sure you can win a World Series. So it's time to start that process over again. And that sucks to hear. And it's not going to be all that fun for a few years. But if that's the goal, I feel like that's what you got to do.
Yeah, I think we've been pretty much on par with that same wavelength. And the more time it takes to do that, do your assets deplete in how much they're worth or how much you can get back? Our team's going to find their solution elsewhere. Like this period of time, if you have things that can be sold, like Kikuchi, like Gausman, who knows? He's pitching tonight, right?
Yeah.
He's been up and down. But, like, there are pieces of this team that could be sold for something, and we can get into Bo and Vlad. But I feel like we're that insanity quote, and I don't know if it was you were on here last time doing the same thing over and over again. It's like, how many more times can John Schneider tip his hat, and how many more times can Ross Atkins put a positive spin on something when we see through it as fans or as those covering it? Like, this is not the right puzzle pieces. So do you sell something while you can and restock a farm system that is extremely depleted and just lost another piece that was yeah. part of the farm system?
It requires the heaviest of lifting,
like,
because you just
here.
Lost your best prospect in terms of at least positionally.
The only problem with that, and you guys are totally right, but I'm just kind of other side of the coin, devil's advocate here. The only problem with that is a lot of the guys that you're going to be trading outside of Bo and Vlad, although they're not at their best right now either.
Right.
Vlad's pretty up there right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is you won't really be getting studs in return. You're going to be getting somebody's mm-hmm. 25th best prospect or 30th best prospect, and who knows if they're going to be good mm-hmm. in 2 or 3 years, right? So it's not even...
Yeah, it's not like you're selling, like, Juan Soto off, right? Like,
exactly.
It's someone that you hope another team can find some value in, but the value isn't going to make your team better right away. Like, you have to take steps yeah. backwards, and that's
like
hard.
I don't think you should trade Bo or Vlad, at least not this year. But I think the only person on this current roster that can fetch mm-hmm. a Juan Soto type of package is Vlad. Mm-hmm. And I know he doesn't play a mm-hmm. premium position, but man, when you we were talking about last night. Like, last night, you just don't see that from many guys.
Yeah. Like, ever.
Ever.
Yeah, there were so many, like, I don't know, a bit of promises, but, you know, Shapiro Atkins, the takeover, and this, you know, this regime, like, it was kind of built on, yeah, we're going to build a farm system, right? And I get that it's not going to be the Juan Soto package, but let's say it is all-encompassing, and it is a bunch of 15th best prospects and systems, like, that does give you the shot in the arm there. And then I guess you're going to have to do your heavy lifting at the top of the draft when you're struggling for a few years.
Yeah, I mean, the draft is very important. I don't know that the Toronto Blue Jays have drafted very well over the last
it's hard to say
however many years. But, I mean, who's been their best guy? Probably Alec, mm-hmm. Noah.
Oh, yeah.
and he's kind of been up and down.
And there was,
we know the story.
Nate
there.
Nate Pearson was this, was someone we were so excited about. And
Nate
look at
Pearson
this.
Is. Did, I mean, I know you guys didn't watch the game last night, but he gave up.
I'm not gonna lie, we didn't.
He gave up two pop ups, yeah. And you guys saw the highlights. So you saw Addison Barger kind of. Mm-hmm. Whatever, we saw that.
yeah. Something happened there.
But his stuff is so good. How can you can't give up on a guy like that, right? You can give up on a guy like Tim Mesa. You can give up on a guy like Eric Swanson, let's say. But you can't give up on a guy like Nate Pearson. So, talking about the draft, I would have drafted him in the first round for sure.
So you've obviously been through development as a major league pitcher. Are you at all like red flags with the fact that there is an issue all the time with the conveyor belt here with the Blue Jays? Like even Tiedemann, like the steam has, you know, dissipated there with his development and where he's going.
Yeah.
And I know that's not just all on the organization. It's not on the player exclusively either, but why can't they develop arms?
I think a lot of it is luck. Like you draft a guy and you have no idea if he's going to stay healthy or not. Like in Ricky Tiedemann's case, I think that's just bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
You get a guy, maybe his mechanics aren't perfect. And just because your mechanics aren't perfect doesn't mean you're going to get hurt all the time. But in Ricky Tiedemann's case, it seems like he's hurt all the time, right? You can draft a guy and think he's going to be Gerrit Cole and be this horse for the next 12 years. And then he turns out to be Ricky Tiedemann and he's hurt all the time. It's kind of just flip a coin. And that's why the baseball draft is just such a crapshoot. It's unlike any other draft. I really don't know how it is in hockey. Mm. Is hockey sort of a crapshoot as well?
If
you're a first rounder, you'll probably play like
probably.
Right away.
Yeah,
but even then, it's like lottery. Like, you know, top 15 is pretty much a lock. The next 30 picks are probably around the same, and then it's kind of crapshoot.
So baseball's not like that. You see a ton of guys that are 12th round picks, 10th round picks, and they're studs.
The Jays have some of those guys that have been like the most exciting part of this story. It's like a Schneider. And like a Horowitz. Like
I think Horowitz was the 12th round.
Yeah, and I think Schneider was later. Someone was like, maybe Blair and Barker were reading these a while ago. But I remember being like, wow, that sounds unbelievable that you would have a guy that you found so much value in. And maybe it's just the luck of development. And
but it's also like the department of serviceable, not high-end, isn't it?
Well, yeah, they're not.
I think Spencer Horowitz is going to be high-end.
That's really great.
Yeah, I mean, he might not have the power that you guys love and that fans love, mm-hmm. but just watching him in the box, and I don't know if many people are that high on him. I said Alejandro Kirk was the top 10 catcher in baseball, I think, at the beginning of the season.
He did. Which,
you know, his career is not over, but he certainly doesn't look that way right now. I think just the way he is in the box, the way he carries himself this early on in his career and his approach at the plate, I think that is something that is rare. You don't really see that very often, and I think the jury's not out on Spencer Horowitz, but I think we'll find out in a year and a half, whether he is the real deal. But I personally think he's the real deal. I think there should be more hype on him, more hype than there is currently.
That's good. We're always looking for success stories to follow.
We have 3 months to talk about Spencer Horowitz
leading our discussion every day. Okay, so here's something that I see a lot of discourse online about is John Schneider's decision for the lineup and who comes in and out during the game. What can we hold John Schneider for, like to be held responsible for in terms of where the Blue Jays are at record-wise, where they're at performance-wise? I know the players are the ones that play the game, and Ross Atkins is the one that puts them into a Blue Jays uniform. But John Schneider has to be able to, you know, puppeteer some of these players. So where are you at with what John Schneider's done? Because it would be something that some people have circled to be like, fire him, right? Mm. But they've gone through a couple managers in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I don't think John Schneider's getting fired. Mm-hmm. I think it'll look horrible for Ross Atkins just because he's already gotten rid of two managers. Why would you get rid of a third? That looks bad on Ross Atkins. But I think I don't have many issues with John Schneider. Mm-hmm. I think he's a very adequate major league manager. But I think the biggest thing that I notice from him, and I've always been critical of managers in the past when I played broadcasting of this certain thing is bullpen management. Mm. And you bring a guy into a ball game last night specifically, you bring Tim Mesa into that ball game. Tim Mesa has been struggling. Nate Pearson didn't look bad.
Mm-hmm.
His stuff was great. He was throwing 99, 100 miles an hour, sharp breaking ball, two pop-ups, and then you take him out for a guy that's been struggling for the majority of the season. And his stuff isn't that great either, right? His stuff isn't what his stuff was a couple years ago. So when I look at situations like that, it really frustrates me. And I know that it's not just John Schneider in that dugout. Mm-hmm. It's Pete Walker making the decision with him. Maybe Don Mattingly, whoever else is on the pitching side. But, like, what are we doing there? Like, you've lost 5 games in a row. This is a huge game going forward in this season. Mm-hmm. And you bring in Tim Mayza. I know that he gave up soft singles. But that's not the point. It's just the optics from me as a player, as a former player. I think that it's just frustrating when you see a manager make mistake after mistake coming from that bullpen. And 100% of the time, if I was John Schneider, I would have left Nate Pearson in that ballgame, especially with a 4-run lead.
Yeah.
So management of the bullpen lineup are obviously things that are, you know, high scrutiny, and there's reason to scrutinize these things. But what is management of a clubhouse like for John Schneider right now? Because you mentioned, you know, the starters and everyone else and how that dynamic might manifest itself. But there's also like the George Springers and the moneymakers who are not living up to potential. There's the Buffalo Brigade coming up. Like, is this like a happy family? Like, I know you're not in there, but like, how does a clubhouse work, especially when there's these triggers and these little things and threads you can pull at? Like, does it become something? Should we worry about it becoming something? Or do these environments kind of just take care of themselves?
So I'll tell you this right now, and I almost guarantee that I'm correct with this. The Buffalo Brigade, all they want to do is have success personally, right? They want to find their footing in the big leagues. They want to get base hits. If Spencer Horowitz goes 3-for-4 and the Blue Jays lose 15 straight, he's sleeping like a baby, right? That's just the way sports, and especially professional sports, is. I'm sure it's the same way in hockey. I'm sure it's the same way in football. But then you go to those guys like Gausman, Kikuchi, Chris Bassett, you know, Bo Bichette, Vlad, guys that have been around. They've already established themselves. I think that's where being a good manager really helps. And I think John Schneider does a good job of weathering those storms. I think he does a good job, especially in his post-game media scrums. I know that he's very PC for the most of his interviews. And it's always, we're working hard, we're doing the right things. This is baseball. Baseball's tough sometimes.
Yeah.
But you also, it gets to be a bit much, but.
But what else can he say a lot of the time?
But I think he's right. Mm-hmm. And you never want to throw your guys under the bus. You never want to say George Springer's bat speed is horrible.
Or that he's the lowest qualified hitter in baseball.
Yeah, but but he sees behind the curtain that we don't see, right?
Yeah,
like,
sure.
He sees George Springer in the video room and in the batting cage and working 3 hours a day on being a better hitter. So what can he say? Right. So in answer to your question, I think John Schneider's a good manager. I think his bullpen management is a little questionable at times, but I think every other aspect of him being a manager is pretty solid. I don't want to say he's an incredible manager because I mean, that's high praise, but I think he's a good manager. I don't think he deserves to be fired. Mm-hmm. I think other people need to be looked at before.
Yeah. I mean, reality is if you're dealt a mediocre hand, it's hard to do much with it. And that's probably what he's dealing with on a day to day.
Okay, Chris, we're going to let you go. You're on the air in 10 minutes and you got to get upstairs. But we got seven games in a row of a loss. Let's get a win. You do your part on the broadcast.
It's good to be back. Like, I was banished from this studio during hockey season.
Oh, well, come on anytime. It helps us be positive. I appreciate it. That's Chris Theroux. You can hear him on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in about 10 minutes. Jays and Red Sox. Jays are on a 7-game losing streak, but it's time to flip the script. And so we got some best bets for tonight. Mine is actually Vladdy to hit a home run. That one that he hit last night was absolutely unreal, like over the green monster into New Hampshire, basically. So plus 420 from the Judy Gun. He's got 2 home runs against Bayo and a 412 average and a 1.3 OPS. So he can get them.
It is a rematch from 6 days ago with Kevin Gausman and Brian Baio. So clearly the Red Sox won that game as part of a sweep. Baio allowed 7 hits, 2 runs across 6 innings. Gausman 4 earned in 5 2/3 innings. So, yeah, there was some offense in that game. I'm going to go the other way on that, though. I think the under 9.5, I mean, you could do really well if you were betting unders at the Blue Jays all season long. Get back on that train. If you get a good Gausman start with the state of the Blue Jays offense, then, yeah, maybe they can keep that under 9.5. We aren't getting many 9.5s to the Blue Jays, at least in the last before the last couple weeks. So I'll take the under on the Jays and Sox despite what happened last time out between these two.
Okay, the Stanley Cup was hoisted less than 24 hours ago. We already have our 2025 Stanley Cup opening odds, and the defending champs, Panthers, are the favorites at 9-1, tied with the Stars, who are also 9-1 odds. Okay. Next rung would be the Hurricanes and the Oilers, who are 10-1 odds. And then a little bit further down the list would be the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are 16-1 favorites. So Avs, Devils, Rangers, Hurricanes, and Golden Knights just above them.
I'm a little surprised that the Oilers are just not the favorites, given that they're going to return pretty much the same team, at least with the
Panthers
star players.
Panthers have more questions than the Oilers.
Panthers
do.
Going third straight Stanley Cup final would be, I think, pretty difficult. Let's be honest. Probably shouldn't be betting into this market right now.
No.
You could have bet the Conn Smythe up until, like, beyond them actually
which I'm happy about.
So, you can be patient here. You don't have to necessarily bet the Stanley Cup 365 days away. But yeah, I think I'm a little surprised that the Oilers, a more public team and clearly bringing back the guys who had an unbelievable playoff run, aren't the shortest odds, but it tells you that where the Panthers and Stars are.
I'm sure in the next couple days we're going to find out about some injuries on both sides. Saw some rumored injuries from Draisaitl and McDavid that don't look, they don't look healthy. And they didn't look healthy in the last 5 minutes of the game where they could barely skate. But this week doesn't slow down at all. Yesterday, the Stanley Cup was awarded. Today, we had the Hall of Fame announcement, which was two builders, Colin Campbell, David Poile. For the women's side, Natalie Darwitz, Chrissy Wendell-Pohl, and in terms of men, Pavel Datsyuk, Jeremy Roenick, and Shea Weber, all going to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. That was today. Tomorrow's the Board of Governors. Thursday's the NHL Awards. Friday's draft, round one. Saturday's draft, rounds 2-7. Sunday's the Stanley Cup parade, and the buyout window ends. And then Monday, it's free agency.
It's still hockey season, Chris LaRue.
Yeah.
I apologize.
LaRue, you
He's
can't
not
come back
allowed
for another 2 weeks.
Another
Sorry,
week
buddy.
At the very least. Yeah. Interesting. A couple interesting Hall of Fame inductees today.
Mm-hmm.
Shea Weber, who's still under contract in the NHL for a couple more years.
He's still getting paid a couple of mil.
Earning a lot of money still. Jeremy Roenick, who's been on the ballot forever. Mm-hmm. And then Pavel Datsyuk is probably the only slam dunk of the bunch. So that's an interesting group. But yeah, Jeremy Roenick was forced to wait a long time for this. And
he sure
now he
was.
Gets into the Hall of Fame. No such
McGill
wait.
And me again. And I know a lot of people have a lot of feelings about that, but maybe next year.
I don't know, but holding the breath on that. But yeah, Datsyuk and Weber, like, right away. And I think one, though, more than the other, slam dunk, that being Datsyuk, at least in my opinion.
I will say, great to see two women get inducted to the Hockey Hall of Fame for the first time since, I believe it was 2010. It doesn't happen very often. The problem is, like, there are a lot of women now.
Bit of a queue.
Backlogged, waiting to get inducted into Hall of Fame. And I was hoping to see our colleague, Jennifer Botterill, or Cassie Campbell-Pascal, who I know is on the committee. But let's say Megan Duggan, Jennifer Botterill. There's a lot of names that deserve to be inducted on the women's side. But they're just going to have to keep waiting because there's a lot of ladies that have not had an opportunity to be drafted. So, inducted and drafted.
And Coley Campbell and David Poile are two of the, like, not like household names, because, executives, not necessarily household names, just in general, but two guys who are pretty integral to where the NHL is right now. So, yeah, another deserving class, but debate can still rage.
Debate can still rage. Okay, so just Blue Jays tonight. We got them on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Mets, Yankees have a big one. That's on Sportsnet 1 if you're going to watch that. And anything else? I kind of need a nap after this hockey season.
I mean, congrats to the Florida Panthers,
yeah,
but also congrats
that.
To the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
It was a hell of an NHL season and an even better Stanley Cup final.
That's right. Only 364 days.
Can't wait.